Welcome back to Money in America with Randall Turner. Hey, my special guest is Charles Earl. Charlie, as he likes to be called. He's got a BA in English and a master's in mass communications. But what I find fascinating, he's been a radio broadcaster, a television newscaster, and a member of the Ohio House of Representatives. Welcome aboard, Charlie.
Well, thank you very much, Randall. It's great to be with you today and with your audience out there in this cold spring day.
Cold day, yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Well, this one of the things you've written a lot. I went to your blogs, and speaking of which, tell people how to find your blogs.
Oh, yeah, I would have to pick one. It's difficult. It's 3Ws dot little stuff. That's littlestuff hyphen minutia, but it's spelled in a weird way and on Ohio way. minoosha.blogspot.com.
Wow. Okay. We will dive into one of the things I saw you write. You seem to have a similar view of what's coming in this economy to what I do and a lot of the PhDs that I've interviewed do, which is a mess, to put it,
right,
for lack of a better way. I've struggled for last year on this show. I've interviewed some phenomenal investors and some phenomenal financial advisors, people with many more degrees than I ever hoped to have, and some say that the sky is falling tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock, and the others say that the rocket's going to lift off tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock, and you better be on board. And I'm just as confused as half my listeners, I think, in where do we go, how do we protect ourselves, how do we invest for the future, and I guess where's the truth in all this?
I believe they're both right, in the sense that if you got mega bucks, you know, the very, very rich are going to be okay because they can identify those little niches of opportunity and capitalize on them, just like Soros plays the money game, you know, the value of the dollar and so forth. I think for the rest of us, we got to hedge our bets both ways, and that's unfortunate because really when you look at it in a realistic basis, you're looking at taking your net worth and cutting it in half, regardless of what happens. But what we're doing is we're going precious metals and real estate. That's the way we're looking at it, and productive farmland. That's the kind of real estate we're looking for, because we also know that in the future, food and things of that nature are going to be more important than they are right today, and every day their importance grows.
Well, Charlie, explain to our listeners why you think that is the case. What do you see
first
coming?
First of all, we've been artificially constraining or restraining the interest rates, given the amount of indebtedness and everything that's going on right now. You know, natural law of economics is the more people that want to borrow, then the higher the cost of money. Well, the Fed has been artificially holding that down and just printing more money to put into the system so that money's readily available. Eventually, that cork is going to pop out of the bottle. And on that scenario alone, we're going to see hyperinflation as it finally, the value of items finally catches up to the money supply, if you will. You know, so when that happens, then your dollar's gonna be worth 50 cents or a quarter or wherever it stops or wherever it seems to hit its peak. On the flip side, though, a lot of our local governments and our state governments, a few of our state governments are in deep trouble. And in essence, the federal government is insolvent, too, if you take the unfunded obligations going forward. And if any of those were to collapse or go down, then it's possible we might have a deflationary cycle. In other words, nothing is worth anything, and we go right back almost to the 1933 basics. I remember my dad telling me back in the 30s they were selling hogs for 6 cents a pound, you know, and that type of thing. So I could see that kind of a scenario coming forward, too.
Wow. You kind of take my breath away.
Well, I mean, you know, that may be the extreme, but I see the potential going both ways. And that's what's tough for a modest investor like me, like us.
Well,
you know, we're okay, but we're not good enough where we can afford to hedge our bets all one way and still come out of it. So we've got to basically play both end games. And so that's making it extremely difficult and, you know, some trying times as we try to figure this thing out.
Well, one of the things that's been spooking me for about a year now is that everyone keeps saying when the U.S. dollar ceases to be the reserve currency, baby, look out, the bottom's going to fall out. Then I read the Wall Street Journal about a week ago, I think it was Wednesday or so. It says that China and Russia have decided that they're no longer to trade oil for dollar bills.
Right.
Instead, it's going to be a basket of one of those two or both those currencies. Well, that's kind of like the minor earthquake, the precursor of the major earthquake, in my opinion.
That's the rumbling. You're right.
Yes, and but, people still aren't paying attention out there, though.
Exactly, but let's take this a step further, and this is what my research has led me to. We're not alone in this game. You know, the entire global financial structure is a house of cards. And even China, despite the fact that it's been buying up so much of our debt, and it isn't that big of a, you know, a little more than a tenth or so, but even they are having trouble supporting their currency. And so I see this, and we all know what Europe's in, you know, the pigs situation there.
Right.
And now with the discontent in the Mideast and how that's going to impact oil and also all those countries, you know, being in the disastrous area. Africa's been a basket case forever. South America's always teetered on the brink of being another basket case. It's a global phenomenon right now. And as the most powerful nation up to this point in the globe, I think the problem comes about because we aren't in a position to fix it. And that's what creates so much of the uncertainty and instability going on in this country and in the globe.
And yet, to be political, it blows me away that the State of the Union, our leader said not to hunker down, not to cut our spending, not to, you know, cut out the pensions and the waste and the whatever, but to spend more money.
Yeah, I know. I wanted to backhand George Bush when he said that after 9/11, and I certainly wanted to give this guy both hands for asserting that. This is the time to conserve. And in fact, you know, for years, Randall, you've been around for a while. You got your eye on the ball. For years, we've been under saving in this country.
Oh yes.
Over consuming, overspending, yes. Too much debt, and under saving.
Yes.
And, you know, I realize now it's a little late. The horse is out of the barn, and all that's left is the tail inside the door. But it's a good time to start saving because you're going to need every shekel of it that you can save, every penny. And now's the time. It's never too late, I think, to start now.
But it amazes me is people's attitudes and expectations. In that number of years back, I had the big six-figure job, and I said to somebody that, you know, I was saving about 35 or 38% of my income every week. And they looked at me like I had three heads. And I'm thinking, no, that's the smartest thing in the world is you put the money aside because you don't know when the rainy day is coming.
Exactly.
And they couldn't believe I would do that because their attitude was, go have fun. You know, go to Europe, go to Cancun, go wherever, go have fun, i.e. blow tons of money. And that's just never one been part of my ethos.
Right. Well, you know, buying a Rosetta Stone and getting a DVD is a lot cheaper than using their lousy electrical system and high-priced tourism. I came late to this game. I was a business owner back in the 80s before I finally realized that it's probably a good idea to put some away for a rainy day. But it to me has always been the mark of wisdom and prudence. And I would rather be in a position where I can take care of my family and survive and be reasonably certain that tomorrow won't be radically worse than today than to be grubbing all the way through day by day, minute by minute. In other words, we've been poor. We've gone through the sofa cushions looking for lunch money for the kids.
So have we.
But that was, you know, that was during grad school and all this other stuff. So. But that was also a real insightful period of time for us to say this is, you know, when we're in the position to do better than this, we will.
Okay, but
and,
I guess
that,
my,
that was an impetus for us.
Forgive me. My big concern is going forward, are we going to become like the Germany, how do you say it, the Weirbach?
Weirmark.
Are we going to become like that where it takes a wheelbarrow to buy a loaf of bread?
Perhaps, yeah.
At that point, what do you have in the bank? What I have in the bank is pretty worthless.
Meaningless, right. So that's why you've got to look for other avenues to offset that, which is why we're doing the land, because we can grow our own. I grew up on a farm, so I'm in an advantage in some respect here. Okay, I have the ability and the skills to do some things that maybe a lot of people don't have. But if you grow your own food, then you've got a source to trade for those, you know, $20,000 for a carrot, or at least feed your family, take care of your family, and do that kind of thing. And then certainly precious metals. But we're still limited in what we can do with them. You want enough to make it worthwhile, but you also need a market for them.
Well, not only that, my concern with that is, look at FDR in 1937. He nationalized gold.
Right.
So why
right.
do I want gold? He's going to, you know, somebody's going to arbitrarily say it's $26 an ounce. Oh, my
they've
gosh.
They've, in essence, already done that, Randall, when they're charging you 3.5%. I think it wasn't it in the health care bill or was it in the Frank Dodd bill?
Oh, no, no, you're right. It wasn't the health care bill. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. A 3.5, of course, that's been ruled unconstitutional. Well, that doesn't matter. They're going ahead anyway. But to put that 3.5% service fee or contract fee in there, it means they can log and find out who has all the gold.
Well,
they,
I understand anything over $600 today is already reported currently under current laws. You buy $600 worth of gold or more, the government knows.
Yeah, so, yeah, that's a piece of dust.
Yes, and it's a piece of dust. You're right. It's not even a half an ounce.
Right.
Yeah, but the irony is with all of our computers, in, especially in government computers, they can find you instantly, and they can find anyone who's got the gold and make you turn it in to them for some worthless amount of fiat money.
Yeah, right, exactly. I understand all that, and I also understand that just finding a market for the product. I mean, the cobbler and the gas station and the grocery store aren't going to want hard metal. They're going to want the $27,000 in fiat money because that's their modus of trade or the way they do it. But there are commodities and things of that nature I think you could reserve and continue to hang on to, and perhaps, corn, I don't know, turn it into fuel. But
right.
but there are that's what we're looking at. We are looking at hard assets.
Something you can use in the case of emergency.
Exactly, exactly. And we're not looking at it as a way to live. We're looking at that as a way to survive. In other words, that is the difference between begging for food and having some means available to acquire it.
Well, some of our listeners remember I interviewed a man named Bill Klingon. He lives in Hollywood. He's a financial advisor asset manager, asset protection. But in any case, that's what he does for the movie stars and the Hollywood big shots, and he's got a clientele list that will blow you away. But the irony is he sees all this coming too, and he doesn't believe in gold either because of the FDR precedent.
Right.
And his thing is he wants to keep rolls of fives and tens under the bed. So that when the banks close, when you can't get your money out easily, you've got it. When you go down to the grocery store to get a bottle of water or whatever, you're not going to want to toss down an ounce of gold because, good grief, that actually could be worth tons of money more than that stupid bottle of water you want.
Right, right.
But maybe it costs $10 for a bottle of water at that point. Well, he figures he wants to have rolls of fives and tens laying around. He just throws it down and walks out. You know, he doesn't have to cash in the gold yet.
Well, we're right back to your original observation, though, that if you need a wheelbarrow for a loaf of bread, you're
going
to need a whole roll of tens for that. And I suspect, and this isn't to knock down your example or his example, but I suspect we won't be buying much bottled water when that day comes.
No, no. Well,
we'll be drinking out of the creeks and ponds.
Well, you know, Egypt.
It's a tough one.
I watch Egypt, and if you paid attention to the news last night, the Egypt riots, there was a fear that not enough protesters would show up this day because they ran out of food and water.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Muslim Brotherhood, bless their little hearts,
was
rounding up food and water to give to the protesters.
Mother Teresa of Islam.
Yes, thank you very much. And people keep saying, it'll never happen here, it won't happen here, that's over there. And you know, it's that old thing, you know, it'll never happen to me kind of thing. And that's why not enough people buy life insurance. No one thinks they're going to die. But
and eventually it's a 1-to-1 ratio, isn't it?
You ain't getting out of here alive.
No,
no. And this is what concerns me about our society, because you talk to people. You know, you get into marketing studies. You know, you always have the early adopters, those ones that are out there on the front edge, leading edge.
Right, right.
The early adopters, in my brain, really been the Tea Party.
I would agree, even though I would argue that they're late to the game. But
yes,
are the early adopters.
No,
they're starting to see it and smell it and understand it.
Yeah, but in your world, you'd be an innovator. You're way out ahead of the early adopters. You know?
Some people say I've gone off the edge, but yeah, you're right. We're probably ahead, yeah.
But the whole idea is they can see the massive trouble coming at us between the unrelenting printing of money, the unrelenting spending of money by our federal government, and how there's always a price to pay. You know,
I think right now they're getting a real education. When the GOP says we're going to cut the 2012 budget by 5%, and the interest on the debt takes up 6% of the federal income. And these people are going, wait a minute. Would you repeat that?
Yeah, go ahead and say that again. What's the interest?
Pardon?
Say that again for our listeners. How much of our federal budget is consumed by interest?
The GOP has projected their budget for next year, for 2012, through Paul Ryan, roughly a 5% across-the-board cut, which I think is stupid anyway, because that means in the next cycle everybody's coming back in to get theirs restored. What you do is you do vertical cutting, not horizontal. But they projected a 5% across-the-board cut for 2012 to get things under control. But the debt, the interest on the debt, is 6% of the government income. In other words, even if they cut 5%, they're still going in the hole, progressively going in the hole.
And let me add a little tidbit to that thought. The interest that the federal government is paying now on bonds is only give or take 3%.
Exactly.
If we go back to the historical norm, which is closer to 5% something, good grief, Charlie Brown, what are we going to do?
67% increase in interest costs. Boom, just like that.
Right.
And it's almost inevitable. You know, when we were talking about hyperinflation as a possibility, given the way that the money has been managed so far, it's inevitable that the prices or the cost of money is going to go up. I think prudence should be the word of the day. People should be prudent. Don't panic. Be prudent. And they'll see their way through it. And you know, just take whatever you can. We believe in storing food. We aren't LDSers. We haven't dug a hole in the ground and lined it with ammo and camo. But we are storing food. Because we also look at this, Randall. The grid is one of our most vulnerable infrastructures we have in this country.
Did you notice the Texas lost power? They're on rolling blackouts in Texas.
Yes, I know, except for the stadium.
Yeah, but do you realize that 2 years ago, Lisa Jackson, the lovely EPA administrator and the EPA, ruled that Texas could not build 12 new coal-fired utility plants?
I know, because they were a danger.
Yeah, they were dangerous.
So tell that little old 95-year-old lady it's freezing to death.
Or tell those hospitals that had rolling blackouts for up to 40 minutes yesterday with no electricity.
Exactly. I think that the first thing we can do to get sensible government is to eliminate every three-letter agency.
I'm with you. That's
it'd be
incredible.
A start.
Yes, because we're not living in reality anymore. We're living in fantasy land. And our president and his cabinet and his bureaucrats and every one of those three-letter agencies are living in the same fantasy land.
Exactly.
We keep spending money that we don't have, borrowing money we can't pay back, creating money that has no basis to it, and then they think that la-la land, everything will be just fine.
It's like they're on crack.
Yes, and I can't understand for the life of me, why does that man have a 55% approval rating when he allows and even enacts such policies?
Well, that's because 55% of the populace is on crack. I can see that in my writing, and you probably can in your shows. I run into people all the time who just don't want to accept it. You know, they want to argue about everything and assume that it's a rosy scenario and the king and his minions are going to save us.
Our emperor has no clothes.
Exactly.
There is no logic or basis in reality of any of these things. I mean, you take all the coal top mining permits that he denied 2 years ago. That was 80, already been prior approved. He denied 79 of them. And actually, he originally denied 80, but one of them was one of the biggest contributors to his campaign union. And so they kicked it back and said, okay, that one can stay. And then the other 160 he killed, that was worth 20,700 jobs, according to what I read, right there on the spot. The federal moratorium that supposedly has been lifted in the Gulf Coast is costing another 100,000+ jobs, depending if you add in the ancillary activities.
And another violation of a court order.
Yes, but this man is a rule unto himself, obviously.
Right. Well, if you know, we have energy resources here. You know, I'm not going to say we would be independent, but we could sure enough do it to the point where conservation could get us by. And just like we're doing with our homes, trying to get through what is going to be a rough time.
Right.
If we were in Anwar or drilling in the shale areas and natural gas exploitation and coal.
We have 325 million acres off limits to any kind of resource development.
Exactly. And Teddy Roosevelt started that mess. He didn't know what he was doing at the time as far as natural resources.
Well, two-thirds of Alaska is off limits, Charlie.
Yeah. So we have the resources. It'll probably take 5 to 10 years to bring them online, but there's no excuse for. I guess I'm a born again Baptist. Okay.
Yeah.
And I feel if God gave it to us, God wants us to use it reasonably with sound stewardship, but use it.
Well, that's what he said in the book of Genesis, was to go and be fruitful and multiply and to take dominion of the earth. It doesn't mean to rape the earth. It means to take dominion of the earth.
Exactly. Use it and do it well and do it for good purposes, not for nefarious ones. So anyway, well, we're coming up on interesting times, as they might say.
Yes, we are. And unfortunately, we're out of time. This has been Charlie Earle, and this is Randall Turner with Money in America.